It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
One, the leader of the free world is not of sound mind, leading to the obvious question, who is the leader of the free world? Two, the absurdity is weighing heavy on the system. Does that mean the system will collapse or reinforce itself to hold up the absurdity? Three, no Russian tennis players in tennis, but a changing of the guard in the NBA. It's the Will Cain podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? Welcome to the weekend. Welcome to Friday. As always, please download, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your audio entertainment, Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. Some programming notes. The Will Cain podcast can largely be found now on YouTube. You can watch me talk and watch me interview guests. We're working on a Will Cain playlist under the Fox News channel on YouTube, but you can watch as well as listen now to the Will Cain podcast in coming days and weeks. We will also try to give you the alternative that many of you have sought, and that is seeing the Will Cain podcast on other outlets, parallel economies like Rumble. All that and more coming soon to the Will Cain podcast. Plus, this weekend, tune into Fox and Friends live from Talladega, where Pete Hegseth, Rachel Campos Duffy, and I will once again triple down on NASCAR. A year ago, we had a great time in Talladega in the infield, knocking back fireball shots. A few months ago, we went to Daytona and played football on the beach. We'll be back in Talladega this weekend, having fun both on and off camera. I'll bring it to you, the stories, right here on the Will Cain podcast. So I hope you'll tune in from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on the Fox News channel. Let's get after it. Story number one. The president of the United States is not of sound mind, and we have to ask, setting aside all semblance of political correctness, who in fact then is the leader of the free world? Several videos came out during the past week in the wake of Easter weekend showing the president of the United States lost, not just lost in the moment, but seemingly lost in his mind. It's an all too frequent occurrence that the American public has come to expect, and yet it is still shocking. Let me share with you a few clips. First of all, here's the President of the United States giving an address with his wife, the First Lady, Dr. Jill Biden, standing by his side. I hope in this audio you'll be able to hear the instructions.
Thank you, and happy, happy Easter. All right. Wait.
There, I think you can hear Dr. Jill Biden telling President Joe Biden, clap, wave, participate, what to do at the end of a speech, wave. Okay, am I being nitpicky? Are we watching a president led by the nose? Or is that a moment of a helpful spouse? Well, it wasn't isolated. Here yet is another incident of the president and the first lady reading a book. Now, they're reading a book to children, and once it's over, or amidst the story, you can hear once again Dr. Jill Biden instruct the President of the United States on very simple manners, on very simple behavior. Listen.
Thank you! Thank you! Okay, just stay.
Sir, Sylvia, just sit. Don't move. She's a teacher.
I'm the teacher, you know.
She's a teacher.
Sit down. she tells him. If you think these are isolated incidences, if you think I'm being nitpicky, I don't think you're participating or paying attention to exactly what's happening in the United States. The American public can see reality plainly. And that's this moment in time. It's the collision of reality and pseudo-reality. What we've been told for 2 years about the nature of this country and whether or not it's racist. What we've been told about the nature of biology and whether or not men can simply declare themselves to be women. What we've been told about safety and the efficacy of a piece of cloth over our faces to protect us from a worldwide pandemic. There's a pseudo-reality that has attempted to shape not just our lives, but our minds, but reality keeps intruding. And we can hear Jen Psaki tell us that the President of the United States makes himself available while simultaneously giving the fewest number of interviews to journalists over the last several administrations. And not by a small margin, by a massive margin. But in reality, we know this is a protected, this is a compromised. And as we learned in the last episode of the Will Cain podcast with Miranda Devine, this is a corrupted president of the United States. The American public can see that reality. Let me share with you some of the latest shocking poll numbers. What's going on with young people who seem to be a reliable voting constituency for the Democratic Party, disapprove of Joe Biden? You can cut this across ethnic lines. You can cut this across socioeconomic lines. Look at 18 to 34 year olds. They came in with a 48% approval rating of Joe Biden. That stands today at 29%. That's a drop in 19 percentage points, having been in office for just over a year. How about black voters? Black voters, of course, are the strongest constituency for the Democratic Party. Let's limit it to 18 to 34-year-old young black voters. Joe Biden at one time enjoyed a 75% approval rating. That today stands at 45%. That's the largest drop. That's a drop of 30 percentage points. How about 18 to 34-year-olds who are Hispanic? Hispanic voters once approved of Joe Biden at 59%. That's dropped down to 32%, a 27% drop in approval rating for Joe Biden. And finally, cutting across socioeconomic or educational levels, 18 to 34-year-olds with no college degree, 48%, at one time a high for Joe Biden, cratering to 27%. We're talking about drops anywhere from 19 to 30% among young people, Latino, black, no college education. Everyone, not just the young, are seeing reality. Everyone can see the president of the United States is not of sound mind. And yet we hear, despite those numbers, despite that reality, Joe Biden has told former President of the United States Barack Obama, reports indicate, that he plans to run again in 2024. By the way, on the subject of Obama, President Obama is giving an address at Stanford talking about the role of disinformation and the threat it represents to democracy. Barack Obama has held himself out in the past as something akin, or maybe something just short of, a free speech absolutist. I don't think we've ever confused Barack Obama with Elon Musk, but in a way, you could almost say Obama was a more quaint form of the progressive movement of today. At one time, Barack Obama was, of course, for example, opposed to gay marriage. Today, you're not sufficiently progressive if you do not think children should be talked to about sex and gender by strangers at public education institutions. But Barack Obama seems to be a man of the moment, and in our censorship regime, they may have found, as one writer, Dan Foster, put it, their spiritual leader in censorship. Obama, scheduled to give that address, published a list of academic readings and articles that have caught his attention. Among those, there are articles on creating and consuming information a real threat to democracy? Or a Pinterest article on how Pinterest had banned climate change misinformation. All of this, of course, in pursuit of their higher purpose. Barack Obama, a man of the moment, progressivism of the moment, perhaps now your leader in thought control. And taking us back to who really is the leader of the free world. It's really hard to look at Joe Biden and think that's a man in charge. As well, in the past week or so, Joe Biden gave a speech in front of, I believe, a gathering of students from historically black colleges. At the end of that speech, you've seen the viral video. He turns and extends his hand to shake no one. He's met with only air. This is an interesting tie-in to our conversation about not just misinformation and not just censorship, but disinformation. Let me introduce you to PolitiFact's explanation of this moment of senility from the President of the United States. PolitiFact tweeted the following. You might have seen a clip of President Joe Biden, quote, shaking hands with thin air. It never happened, says PolitiFact definitively. Here's the truth, as well as how misinformers manufacture and embellish embarrassing presidential moments. This claim appeared on YouTube and Twitter. It was shared by Republicans like Senator Ted Cruz. It even appeared, says PolitiFact, on the Instagram of Snoop Dogg. The horror, this type of dementia and compromise making its way into the hallowed halls of pop culture. It even showed up, says PolitiFact, on Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update. Oh no, the cathedral has been invaded. Reality and truth have stormed the halls of comedy, i.e. propaganda. PolitiFact explains that the video showed that Biden was actually pointing at the audience behind him with his whole hand. He acknowledges the right side and then the left and then begins to walk forward. The reality is you have eyes and you have a mind. Did he point to an entire audience with his whole hand? Did he motion left and then turn and motion right? Or did he extend a hand to empty air and stumble around seemingly lost as to which direction he should next follow? I'll tell you what, I won't answer that question for you. You watch the video yourself. You are very capable of understanding reality, despite that attempt at disinformation from PolitiFact, the biggest purveyors of misinformation and disinformation in 21st century America are those who claim to be defenders of democracy and those who claim to be the checkers of fact. But again, this isn't the only moment. If you want to continue to search out videos of Joe Biden's competency, you will see another one where he confronts reporters on the lawn during a White House Easter egg roll, and he begins to talk about Afghanistan. He's asked about serious, important issues, not what's his favorite ice cream? And what then happens? The President of the United States is interrupted by the Easter Bunny. The Easter Bunny comes waving in, distracting Joe Biden, gathering his attention, and then points stage left. President Biden, please move this way. The Easter Bunny leads Joe Biden. Who's in the costume? Who's in charge? Who's the leader of the free world? I challenge you, listen to those clips. Watch those videos, all from 1 week's time frame. And honestly ask yourself, what is reality? I think you'll find yourself in the same vein as these poll numbers that reflect everyone's ability to understand the truth. The President of the United States is not competent to run for re-election in 2024. The President of the United States is not competent to run the free world. And that leads us to the obvious question, a question that every citizen of a free democracy has a right to have answered. Who is in charge? You cannot tell me that man, directed by the Easter Bunny, told when to sit by his wife and when to wave. That man who shakes air is in charge of international diplomacy, war, the economy, inflation, gasoline production. You cannot tell me that man is in charge of our future. There's another Easter Bunny inside the White House. Who's telling him which policy to pursue, what to say in his speech? You often hear him in his speeches say, I'm going to get in trouble for saying that, for going off script. Sometimes, like an old 80-year-old who says, I'm not going to eat the pudding, when he gets angry and adamant. But in the strategically planned moments, who's in the costume? Who's telling him what to do? Ron Klain? Jill Biden? Barack Obama? Who is in charge? Who's the leader of the free world? Who's in the Easter Bunny costume?
We'll be right back with more of the Will Cain Podcast.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today.
Story number two. It's getting increasingly absurd, and that leads us to the question of whether or not the system can support its own absurdity or it collapses under the weight. Does it reinforce our increasingly insane world? This past week, one lone brave judge struck down the Biden administration's directive to the TSA to enforce mask wearing on public transportation. Amtrak extends to places like Uber and, of course, airports and airlines. One lone brave judge appointed by President Trump, who once clerked for Clarence Thomas, said this is capricious, not subject to public record, meaning debate and discussion, and is not supported by scientific strength of evidence. This lone judge has now ended our long nightmare of breathing beneath cloth. But the CDC has now asked the DOJ to appeal this ruling by this Florida federal judge. The CDC, the first example of our increasing absurdity. I wonder, how much credibility carries with you today does the CDC? I wonder, the CDC, who at one time recommended, and may still, the 6-foot social distancing rule, which we know and we have found since then is completely arbitrary and not supported by science. Coronavirus doesn't know the difference between 6 and 7 feet, just like coronavirus was capable of leapfrogging a plastic barrier at the restaurant or moving horizontally at ATM machines as we saw our spaces marked out. The CDC has been the leader in these types of recommendations that are nothing short of absurd. And it only is a matter of time before each of these are essentially then acknowledged later by the CDC as absurd. I guess they're not ready to give up on masking, just like they're not ready to give up on the lack of scientific evidence to support the necessity of children getting the vaccine. We know the CDC, by the way, totally disregarded the testimony of doctors in their own hearings on whether or not we should mandate or recommend the vaccine for children. But the CDC wants to continue to push that absurdity and bring back masks to seat 13B on your American flight this summer for your vacation. Can it continue to hold up this absurdity? How about this, as we're talking about the weight of absurdity continuing to pile? How about Jen Psaki, the press secretary of the White House, talking about the necessity, not just the necessity, the human right, the emotional appeal of strangers talking to children about gender and sex? I want you to listen to Jen Psaki.
This is a political wedge issue and an attempt to win a culture war. And they're doing that in a way that is harsh and cruel to a community of kids, especially. I'm going to get emotional about this issue because it's horrible. But you know, it's like kids who are bullied, and like all these leaders are taking steps to hurt them and hurt their lives and hurt their families. And you look at some of these laws in these states, and it is going after parents who are in loving relationships who have kids. It's completely outrageous. But it is a wedge issue. Sorry, this is an issue that makes me completely crazy. But it is an issue that is a political wedge issue. It is not a reflection of where the country is.
Just take a moment. I'm telling you, I've learned over time the power of emotion. I've always heard, you know, that you can lead people through an emotional appeal much more readily than you can lead them through a logical appeal. The power of emotion is real. You hear Jen Psaki with those crocodile tears. Listen to what she is portraying, the subject of her emotion. She's portraying the right of strangers, teachers, in public education institutions to talk to children about their own sexuality, about gender fluidity. This isn't about, as you heard in that clip, by the way, whether or not a teacher can be asked a question. Well, what about Sally? She has two moms. No, that can come up. But it should be about, and it is about, whether or not a teacher can talk to a young man or woman about whether or not all of a sudden she thinks she is not a man or a woman. Because that's not the place. Every rational American knows. Every rational human knows that's not the place of a second grade teacher. It's the place of a parent, of a family. You know, this whole movement is so fascinating because what we've done is we've moved from tolerance and acceptance, an admirable goal, one where I think the majority, if not the plurality of American people had arrived with an acceptance, for example, of gay marriage, tolerance, acceptance, live and let live, an American value. But we move from that to validation, tolerance to validation. Validation now means, say, that we must not only accept, but we must honor, we must high five, we must celebrate someone else's every life decision. Not just that, we must tell them they are right, and anyone else that disagrees is not only wrong, but amoral. That's what's required of our validation. In order to pursue that validation, that moment of not acceptance, that moment of pride, then we will use, as strangers, children. I don't know if you've seen these videos, but it's often, for example, on the now target of harassment, libs of TikTok, these videos of teachers saying, I will still come up to my children, come out to my children, their children being your children, their students. I will talk about my weekend with my partner. Why? Why do your students need to hear about your personal life? Why do you need to be validated by the next generation, by young minds, by molding minds? Again, not accepted, not tolerated. Why does it? It's this fight. It's this war. It's this confrontation to make children validate your decisions. Why is tolerance not enough? And don't think it stops from tolerance to validation. From validation, it goes to domination. We are in the age of tribalism. We are in the age of oppressor and oppressed. We're being led by a group of people who only see the world through that prism, oppressor and oppressed. And therefore, the only way to achieve justice, not just tolerance and not even just validation, but justice, is in the end, domination, to flip the roles, to become the oppressor. That might be down the road, but it is not far. And we will have those discussions probably within a matter of months, at the most within a matter of years, because what we have moved far beyond is live and let live. What we've moved far beyond is tolerance. We're on the path, the absurd path, from validation to dominance. And finally, as we count the weight of absurdity on top of the system, I give you Disney. Well into this fight, for example, for parental rights and education in Florida, analyzing their own catalog. Now, Disney is looking at their characters through the prism, of course, of marginalized communities and the oppressed. And Tinkerbell now seems to be a symbol of body shaming. of body dysmorphia. She's too small, too focused on that. Ursula, the sea witch from The Little Mermaid, too darkly complected, purple, by the way, and too extravagant in mannerisms as to evoke a drag queen. Which, by the way, even if so, isn't that representation? Isn't that tolerance? Or is it that it has to be a validated behavior and it can't be embodied in the anti-hero, the villain of the story? It can only be embodied in the hero of the story. It's not representation, really, is it then? It's validation. Disney analyzing all of its character catalogs to go back and, I don't know, provide warnings, refurbish its characters, replace. It's all so absurd. I'm not saying any of these three things I'm giving you are necessarily connected. The CDC, Disney, the moments of virtue that requires us to preach to children about sexuality. But it just shows, I think, the increasing rate and the increasing extremity of absurdity on the system. By the way, more discussion in the future here on the Will Cain podcast about what exactly is the system. We've talked a lot about, is it coordinated? Is it conspiratorial? Is it organic? Is it cultural? Whatever it may be, and we're going to have more discussion on that, the system clearly is a hive mind. A hive mind of academia, every higher education institution. A hive mind of corporate America, Fortune 500 companies. A hive mind enforced on technology by the biggest technology companies. A hive mind within mainstream media, all your journalists from bottom to top, all being only a slight hyperbole. A hive mind among much of your political leaders. How is it possible? How is that possible? When people refer to the elites, this is what they're talking about, the regime, the system, the cathedral. How is it possible that all of those people share the same ideas, the same worldview, the same mindset? Conspiratorial and corrupted, or cultural and grassroots? The system is spinning out of control on its own absurdity. And I think the only real question as we go through these examples is that system strong enough to convince you, like in our first story, that the absurdity is actually reality? Can it reinforce all of us into this insanity? Or does it collapse under the weight of its own absurdity, under the weight of reality?
We'll be right back with more of the Will Cain podcast.
Story number three. Russian tennis players out, changing of guard in the NBA in. The All England Lawn Club, which runs Wimbledon, has announced that in its, of course, pursuit of justice, of virtue, that it will ban Russian and Belarusian tennis players from Wimbledon. Who does this specifically and directly target? How about world number two in men's tennis, Daniil Medvedev of Russia, ranked number two in the world? You remember Medvedev, I believe it was at the Australian Open, who walked up to a camera with a Sharpie and wrote, "No war," a direct rebuke of Vladimir Putin. But Daniil Medvedev committed a sin, according to the All England Lawn Club, and that is that All England Lawn Tennis Club, and that is he's Russian. Therefore, he cannot participate. It also applies to, for example, in women's tennis, world number four, Arina Sabalenka, number four in the world, can't participate in Wimbledon. Again, her sin being Belarusian. It's the first time that Wimbledon has pushed players out, according to their nationalism, since the wake of World War II, when German and Japanese players were barred from playing in Wimbledon. This is, for what it's worth, being objected to by the ATP and the WTA, as well as Novak Djokovic. It's really fascinating, by the way, in the world of sports, how people I thought were my anti-heroes are emerging as your heroes. It's something to think about. We're in a very fluid world, and I'm not talking about gender. I do think there's things changing underneath our feet when it comes to economic populism, what it means to be a true small L liberal, what it means to believe in free speech. what it means to care about the common man. The ground is shifting under our feet. Our traditional definitions of Republican and Democrat, and our traditional definitions of good guy and bad guy, and even our traditional definitions, and this is for me, on seemingly personality connections to masculine virtue. Yeah, masculine virtue and strength are shifting. I never thought Aaron Rodgers, who, let's be real, I thought was an example of selfishness, would become a hero of individual dignity, of escaping the hive mind and groupthink, of representing free thought. And yet here we are, Aaron Rodgers, in my estimation, definitely the good guy of the story of the last 2 years. And same with Novak Djokovic, not exactly known as the good guy within tennis. And these are about personality traits and choices and demeanor on the court and the way they came up. Where Rafael Nadal or Roger Federer are much easier to root for. And yet it's Djokovic in Australia who again represents individual dignity and bodily autonomy and free thought. And it's Djokovic who stands up here for Medvedev and Sabalenka against this absurdity, this cheapening of virtue. That's what we're on. Just everything is cheap and easy. We buy. We're consumerists. Everything is cheap and easy. Our virtue, our signaling, the flags in our Twitter handle, the needles that show you're vaxxed. Everything is easy and cheap on its way to virtue. And the latest isn't simply confined to social media. It's the All England Lawn Tennis Club, for some reason, finding virtue in banning tennis players who are from Belarusia or Russia. Meanwhile, while those tennis players are out in the NBA playoffs, I think there's a changing of a guard. New kings of the NBA on their way in. We're only the first week into the NBA playoffs, so here are my early takeaways. Your traditional stars are letting you down. The Brooklyn Nets are now down 0-2 to the Boston Celtics. And look, although I predicted the Nets to go far, it was based upon perhaps an outdated analysis that in the NBA, you have to have the top star. Or it was predicated on exactly who is now the star. Meaning, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving aren't enough to overcome a team defense in Boston and the emergence of new stars. More on that in just a moment. Kevin Durant was absolutely bullied in game two against the Boston Celtics. He went 0 for 10 in the second half, 4 for 17 in the game. Kyrie, he went 4 for 13 in game two. He went off in the first game. But between the two of them, they shot under 33%. Those stars that you would think that I thought would carry them not just past the Celtics, but well into the Eastern Conference Finals, letting them down. And those aren't the only big stars seemingly falling in the NBA. Some of the injury, Devin Booker's out 2 to 3 games for the Phoenix Suns with a strained hamstring. The stars of the NBA seemingly changing hands as we speak, a changing of the guard. Other stars that have arrived and replaced the KDs and Kyries of the world, the emergence of stars, are guys like Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics. Joel Embiid has arrived as a new king of the NBA. Anthony Edwards, a star for the Minnesota Timberwolves. We should point out the role of role players in the NBA so far. In fact, I would say outside of a changing of the guard at the top, the story of the NBA playoffs in this first week is the emergence of second and third options. It's guys like Tyrese Maxey in Philadelphia. Not James Harden, but Tyrese Maxey is the one holding up the Sixers along with Joel Embiid. It's Jordan Poole in Golden State. How about that death lineup? Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Jordan Poole. Jordan Poole, too good to put on the bench. Steph Curry, too good to take out of the starting lineup. How about Beasley in Minnesota holding up, stepping up? How about Jalen Brunson in Dallas putting 41 on the Utah Jazz without Luka Doncic? These role players, the difference makers in the first week of the NBA playoffs. So while we have these new young role players stepping in to represent the princelings of the NBA, the changing of the guard, the changing of the top, the kings, seems to be taking place it seems to be we're losing or replacing the LeBron Jameses. We're in the active path of this, the active process of this. The LeBron James, the Kevin Durant, the Kyrie Irvings, with the Jason Tatums, the Luka Doncic's, the Joel Embiid's. A change at the top supported by a change to the side of the throne. And what you have now is the end right now of the dynasty, a transition period, the rise of the team. It could hurt some of my predictions, although I'm looking pretty good on most. I'm hurting on my Nets prediction. I think almost every other one is doing well. Bucks tied 1-1. Chris Middleton's hurt. That one's looking a little shaky as well. Outside of that, this changing of the guard represents a changing of the teams, but the constant will lead you the way, if I may. That's going to do it for me today here on the Will Cain Podcast. Again, hang out with us this weekend at Talladega, the Talladega 500 on Fox and Friends. I'll be with you here on the Will Cain Podcast at Apple, Spotify, Fox News Podcast, YouTube, and soon to be Rumble. Leave a review. Leave a comment. I read your comments on YouTube, at Apple, on Twitter, on Instagram. And hang out with me again come Monday. I'll see you next time.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.